What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, August 8th, 2017. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the busiest lady in the business, Andrea Renee.
Good morning.
Run me through where this outfit came from. I was in Montreal months ago and saw one of those cat-collared shirts and did... Yeah, you know this thing where you take a photo of something because you don't actually want to buy it for somebody? You send
right.
the photo like... I sent it to Cindy Tang or whatever because I saw that and then Scott Lowe's wife reminded me of it. Where did you get this?
I actually got this from a thrift store.
Ooh.
But I believe it can be found on ModCloth, which is a website.
Interesting, yeah, yeah.
So for people who are listening, I'm wearing a black shift dress with a white collar, but the white collar's in the shape of a cat.
It's
so
a
the
kitty.
Face is on one side and the feet are on the other because it's International Cat Day.
Oh, is it really?
Yes, it is.
I didn't realize that.
And I have two tuxedos, which are also black and white.
Yep.
They are adorable.
Good. What are their names?
Maverick and Ghost.
Great. Now bring me up to speed on what the hell is going on with Paragon.
I've seen you popping. Just gonna go right into it.
You're popping off on Twitter about it. We were getting ready for the update. You weren't excited for the update. I guess the update's live now. Is that what happened?
Technically, the update isn't live because they had to bring the servers down because the game melted.
Okay. I saw that. I saw you quote tweeting that today. Not pulling any punches.
No. You want to get into this right now?
Yeah, sure.
So here's the thing. They've been promoting V42 for a long time, for at least a couple of weeks, and saying, you know, they're really excited about the new update. I had the opportunity to play it. We talked a little bit about it on the show. I logged on this morning to get everything loaded because I'm planning to stream later today with the new update. And I was entered into a queue. I tweeted a photo, a screenshot of the queue. It was... over 7 hours long, the queue.
You sit in the queue, it'll be ready by the time you're ready to stream.
Well, you would think, except in the 5 minutes that I sat there tweeting about this queue, I got kicked from the queue three times. And by the fourth time I got re-entered into the queue, it had jumped up to 9 hours long.
Wow.
And so the queue, they have come forward and said, you know, I mean, I don't know if it's, I had to look up the public statement. But the queue is kind of artificial because what happens is they've taken the servers down. And so the queue to get back into the game isn't really representative of how long it's going to take. We actually don't know.
Sure.
We've been told that they are working on it right now. Obviously, for every minute the game is down, that's more stuff they aren't selling in the game.
Exactly.
So, of course, it... you know, behooves them to try to get it up as quickly as possible. More reasons for people to buy XP boosts, ref boosts, skins, etc.
Yeah.
So it's frustrating.
Sure. Yeah. You're because, a hardcore Paragon player.
Well, the thing that I had tweeted was that I was upset because they said, oh, we had so many members of our community come on board. We just weren't prepared.
Yeah.
That to me is an unacceptable response from a development team like Epic Games.
Sure.
We've talked about this issue on the show several times, and I have kind of given passes to some of these smaller studios.
You're an indie thing. People didn't pre-order. The betas were
exactly.
On PC.
It's sometimes hard to tell exactly what server load's going to be. But for a game like this that has been, was in closed alpha, then went to open alpha, then was in closed beta, and is now an open beta, you've had over a year to manage your servers, and you know exactly how many registered users you have.
And that's the thing. This isn't a wild card. As big as this update is, it's another one of those updates that I feel is big to the Paragon players, not
correct.
The gaming at large. I don't think hundreds of thousands of new players showed up today, but probably...
Right.
Hundreds of thousands lapsed players, right? People who haven't been playing for a while came back to try to check it out.
Absolutely, but Epic knows how many players have downloaded the game and installed the game. They have that information. So I'm mad about it. I'm not saying they're not working on it. Of course, tons of people are working hard behind the scenes to get this fixed. I want to play. Thousands of other people out there like me want to play.
Yeah.
It just, to me, is like their explanation for why the servers aren't working just is kind of a head scratcher for me. It's
sure.
like, how did you not anticipate this? You've
been exactly.
promoting this day for weeks. You knew that a massive influx of players were going to come today to download and play the game.
Yeah.
I'm just like, what?
It's okay. Maybe it'll be worked out by the time you get home.
I hope so.
You think so? I don't know.
I don't know.
You never know with server stuff.
Yeah.
Especially when you're launching new stuff.
But you know who has money for servers, though?
Who's that?
Epic Games.
That's true.
That you have true. Money for servers. Don't That's pretend true. Like you don't.
They're turning them all on right now. They're dusting them off. They're moving them over from Fortnite servers to these servers.
Right.
Now, you brought a gift and I kicked it over, but it's still going to be fine.
Okay.
I knocked the battery out. This clock was running. This awesome PlayStation 1 clock.
Here, I'll get the battery.
I got it.
Okay.
Damn it!
Oh, no!
And I popped off the number. Yeah,
gosh. We'll have to fix it.
No, trust me. Kevin will have this guy up and running. Kevin, you come fix him. I broke him again. But he was running well before. He'll run well again.
So this was a little gift that was rescued by my husband. And he was like, hey, I have this thing. And I was like, that's a cool thing. Yeah. I know who would appreciate this cool thing.
Dang right we would.
It is
PlayStation clock.
Do you know the thing that I didn't show you?
Yeah. What's
when,
that?
When she cuts, when wait, she cuts.
Well, Joey, right now, heads up, yet. Joey Noel learning the controls over there so that when Kevin and Cool Greg are both gone, Joey can do it.
You didn't okay. show me how to do this part.
Okay.
You just hold it up, yeah. and then he's going to cut to your one.
Okay.
All right, so hold on. Everybody, there's one's coming. There you go.
Okay, here yeah. we go.
Sure.
So if you hit this button.
Whoa.
It actually opens. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, this is awesome. Thank you so much for bringing this guy in.
You're welcome.
I had him all set, too. The time was working. Everything was going fine.
For people who are listening, what Greg is holding is a clock that looks like the top of the original PlayStation.
What is this? It is the top of the original PlayStation.
Yeah, I think it is an actual one that somebody has cut off. Yeah. And it has a clock hands on it. And it's actually a functioning clock. And the lid where you put the disc actually still opens.
Thanks for looking out for the podcast listeners. Because they're like, what is it? It's the top of a PlayStation 1. It's awesome. And it's a clock. But ladies and gentlemen, this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms. We jump into the nerdy video game news you need to know about. We get hands-on with it. We get dirty with it. We answer your questions. We talk and prognosticate like nobody's effing business. If you like that, you can watch us record it live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. But we don't look in the chat. We only look at the end of the show at kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong, where all the live viewers correct us on the things we screwed up while we were prognosticating like no one's business. If you want to watch it later, youtube.com/kindoffunnygames or podcast services around the globe. No matter where you get it, thank you for supporting this show. It is a success because of you. We love you. We appreciate you. You're awesome. Real quick housekeeping, there's a new party mode up on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. You can, of course, wait. It'll be free tomorrow if you don't want to give us a dollar, but every dollar helps. And then right now on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, there is the Metroid Samus Returns Let's Play up with me, Tim, and Sam from Nintendo Treehouse. Kevin is interesting. For now, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. There are 5 items on the Roper Report.
A baker's dozen.
We're going to piggyback off that Metroid Samus Returns Let's Play. Because during it, and because I broke an embargo. Oops. And I didn't know about it.
Oh, no.
And you heard it on Kinda Funny Games Daily, and no one really called me on it, which was interesting. During the Let's Play for the Samus Returns DS game, they were a 3DS game. They're showing the amiibos, and like, and this one unlocks a new mode. And I went hard mode, and she goes, "No, hard mode is in the game. Hard mode is in this game from the beginning. This unlocks fusion mode, which is harder than hard mode, and where you wear the fusion suit for." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And I thought that was general information. So on one of the games daily,
you mentioned it to me.
You said, "Oh yeah, and the amiibo unlocks hard mode." I'm like, "Actually, it's fusion mode." And you're like, "Oh, whatever." And we just went on
because I was like, "I have no idea what that is." Well, because I didn't know. It was under embargo.
See, if you watch this, it would be, well, I didn't think anything of it. I thought, "Oh, I got this wrong, and this is information that everybody already knew."
Like, oh, okay.
Again, like the long and short of this story is the fact that, man, did they bungle this announcement. Man, was this a weird way to roll out
what?
Any of this
Nintendo
information.
Nintendo bungle an announcement?
I know. They also today announced a new 3DS for this game. Doesn't come with it, but it looks like Metroid. It's the orange and red. Looks awesome, actually. It's a really cool looking system. But yeah, from the get-go, announcing this and being like, everybody's like, kept asking. Kleppit kept asking, so hard mode's locked behind this amiibo? And they said, keep looking at the Facebook page. The Facebook page has the information. Look at the Facebook page. That's all they'd say.
Right.
And so everyone ran with this story that you had a normal mode, and then to unlock hard mode, you needed these amiibos. When in reality, no. You play through, you beat normal mode, you unlock a hard mode, but then if you get the new Metroid amiibos, you then unlock this fusion mode, which is harder than hard mode and gives you this new fusion suit.
Okay, so maybe this will appease some people who wrote into the show who were like, hey, I'm a longtime Metroid fan. I can't believe that they're gatekeeping hard mode. Mm-hmm. So for the record, hard mode is included with the game.
Correct.
You do not have to buy it separately.
Yeah. The US Gamer, when they were talking to them about it, goes in deeper that the content fusion mode, of course, this challenging campaign, the fusion suit, this content will not be offered a separate DLC in Nintendo's digital eShop at any point. So clarification on a story that continues to evolve. You said it once, you said it was crazy, and then it kept popping up. Maybe now we're finally done with it. Maybe. You don't know until the game comes out. Are you going to play this game?
Probably not.
Yeah. here's my problem. Mm-hmm. Watching Tim play it, it's like, damn, this actually looks really good. This actually seems really good, and it seems really fun, and fixes some of the problems I've had in the past with Metroid. It doesn't look as clunky. No offense to Metroid fans, that is the other ones I've played, because obviously this is a 2017 version of a old ass game. But I don't want to start carrying around a 3DS again.
My 3DS has been like dead, like in a drawer for a long time,
right? Yeah. And that was the thing when we moved, and I had to like clean out all the video games systems and consoles, and like there's just this box of like, I can't throw you away yet, but I also don't want to look at you, and there's in the closet shoved away. Yeah. I don't want to go break it out. Just announce it for Switch after all. Please. We're breaking a Nintendo. Number two is an interesting one, Andrea.
Yes.
Yeah. These kids get excited for that Minecon. They go around the world. They go there. They all celebrate Minecraft. This year, they're doing Minecon Earth. That's right. November 18th, 2017 is Minecon Earth. There is no event. You go nowhere. This is what they're calling an interactive live stream show. No event. There will be screenings at theaters. They will you like the merch you see, you buy it online and they ship it to you. It's going to be going at 1700 hours GMT. That's going to be a 90-minute long show, though. So Minecon, as Minecraft fans know, it is dead. Long live Minecon Earth now, which is just a live streaming event for them to talk to you directly.
Wait, are you sure about this? I got a press release about this.
Look into it, please, because it was a confusing thing of, I saw the tweet go out, I watched the video. What is Minecon Earth? Minecon Earth is our live streaming event we're doing. This is how we roll with it. This is what it is. I then went to the Minecon Earth site, saw nothing there. What will I see off the official site? We don't want to ruin the surprises, but we can promise that the 90-minute interactive live stream will feature the same kind of entertainment, humor, and announcement from past Minecon events. The goal is to have fun with the community while we celebrate the Minecraft we all know and love.
I think there's still a Minecon, because according to this, it says, what's happening? New year, new Minecon. We're shaking up the format of the event this year, and today we're introducing two new elements. A global interactive live stream broadcast from two continents on November 18th and viewed by players around the world in their living rooms. So to me, that indicates that there's still an event.
We'll see. Okay, watch the video. Because the video is very clear. No tickets. No. I mean, it's one of those things where it would be the most. I mean, don't get me wrong. This is kind of a confusing announcement ever, because I would have said, hey, Minecon's just this live streaming thing. That's what we're doing now.
Right.
I would have been very clear. But it also tears down every live event there is,
right?
Where it's like, no lines, don't want to queue up for stuff, we don't either, don't do it. You want to get the merch, don't wait in lines, buy this here. Want to go to a panel, you have to worry about saving seats. It's like, what? Well, if they're also doing that, well then why are they fucking talking shit on their own event?
So what it says here in the press release, it says, why is Minecon changing? Minecraft is built on inclusivity and creativity, and the old Minecon became an expensive and exclusive event where the vast majority of our community could not participate. With the combination of our live stream and the official Minecraft community events, we're excited to make it easier for everyone to participate from all around the world. I want in. How do I participate? And so this gives details then about the broadband that you need and the live stream.
Sure.
It says there will also be get-togethers in select cities where you can meet developers, creators, and other crafters and have a whole lot of crafty fun. We'll have more details to share soon. So it sounds like they're doing physical meetup events still, but they're not the same event that Minecon was.
They talk
was
about
in the past.
Screenings at theaters and stuff to go meet up like that. Yeah, but Minecon in terms of going to a convention center, seeing all this different stuff is dead.
Right.
That thing. If you want the merch, you order it off that. Community meetups, I don't think, are the exact same thing. So it's an interesting take that to me sounds way less exciting and cool. But this is like we talk about with season passes or yesterday with all the Shadow of War microtransaction stuff. I'm not part of that community, but I know that I love Kind of Funny Live 3 or Kind of Funny Live period. And I love PAX and I love all these different events that I do go out and see all these different people at. And it is an event and it is interesting. The video they put up was very much like how it sucks that tickets are gone in 2 seconds, which I understand. And they have to go through a scalper or a second party or something to that effect. I get all of that, but that's also live events. I don't think anybody's figured it out to have how do you throw a popular live event and not have those kind of problems.
Absolutely. I think Blizzard does an excellent job with BlizzCon every year. I mean, granted, you know, the premium passes for that, the digital tickets you still have to pay for.
Yeah.
But that's an event that is like, hey, we're having a physical space where people can come and cosplay and get together and play together, have competitive tournaments. But you can also participate in that entire event digitally if you want to. You can, you know, jump into the live stream, you know, and they kind of made it this pay-per-view destination event. I would have thought that maybe Minecraft would have gone more like that route instead.
This is interesting because it's such a, I mean, it's 90 minutes long, so it's more of, I think of it now, it's such a Nintendo Direct, but those are so short. So I guess it's more of a Sony E3 press conference kind of feel. And granted, who knows what how they're going to treat it on stage and how much interactivity in it. But it's definitely going to get their message out in a short form fashion better. Because as somebody who never went to MineCon, I have no real idea what the fuck happens at MineCon. And I would see the occasional announcement trickle out of it, but at random times from a different panel, from a different room. If everything's there for 90 minutes, you know when to watch because that's when the heavy hitters are going to come out and do things. Okay, I get that.
Right. Well, and I think the important thing to remember here is this is one game, whereas a lot of other events, and you know, BlizzCon, which I just referenced, is multiple games. Sure. PAX is thousands of games now. You know, things like Comic-Con, is there's a lot to see and do there. So this is probably, you know, they looked at their announcements and like the slate of stuff that they have coming up, and maybe they're like, hey, we're working on a bunch of stuff we're not ready to talk about yet. How about now is a good time for us to change what we're doing at MineCon?
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. It'll be interesting to see what they do and how they handle it. Also, how people react to it. Let us know. Kindoffunny.com/KFGD, just like so many of you Shadow War fans did. We'll get to you later. Number three on the Roper Report, the Xbox update is starting to roll out to insiders. Xbox insiders in the Alpha Ring will get the first look at the latest Xbox One update. This releases the next major update for gaming on Xbox One and Windows 10 PC and is designed to make the Xbox gaming experience more fun, personalized, and social than ever. It'll release later this year for everyone else. Andrea, how much do you use your Xbox One?
Not very often.
Me neither.
So I turned it on to download Tacoma.
Yeah, perfect. There you go. That's when the last time I turned it on. And I looked at the screenshots they had with this one up and I'm like, wow, this looks really nice. Because right now the Xbox One interface looks like garbage to me.
Yeah, not just from a visual perspective, but from a quality of life.
Yes.
Side, like it's really confusing. And I watched Major Nelson's video with him demoing the new UI. Yeah. And I still feel like it's not intuitive. Mm. When I boot up my Xbox and I get to that interface, I just kind of get confused about where I'm supposed to go. And then you get stuck in places. Like I went to the store to input my code. Mm. And it's still amusing to me that they have like the, hey, take a picture of the QR code. And I was like, oh, ha ha ha. My Kinect is in a box somewhere with my 3DS. Right. But like it just trying to get out of the store. And like, I know people out there who are going to criticize me saying it's just a couple button presses. It's not that hard to figure out. You're right.
Yeah, no, we all figure it out.
Right. But like when you're designing a user interface, you want to make it as intuitive and as easy as possible. Why make something four button presses when it could be one?
That's my thing. And I know, you know, the fact that we're PlayStation kids and we don't know what we're talking about to begin with. And this was always my argument when
I was a giant 360 person. Like I never right played PS3.
I hear you. When I was on GameScoop all the time, the argument I would make of when Damon would be like, when this is old GameScape I'm talking about, when Damon would be like, the PS3 cross media bar, I don't understand. I'm like, and I could walk through it in my head. So I totally get that if you are an Xbox One user and that's your primary system, it's all second nature to you and it makes perfect sense. And maybe the PlayStation 4 seems weird to you. But when I jump into the Xbox One every 6 months to play something, it seems, I get in there and it's this weird screen and I got to go down to I have all these pinned things down here. Sure. But then it was like, well, where are all my games? And I'm only digital. So I go over here to the library and burrow. It's just like, what the fuck? Why aren't my games front and center on this machine now? Especially when they went away from being the TV box and being all these different things.
It is an interesting question. Particularly since, as you mentioned, you know, at E3, Phil Spencer, his message was about games.
Yeah.
You would think that the thing that would be on the splash screen at the very front would only be games. And it's not. It's still dominated by other forms of entertainment. And, you know, it's confusing because I use my Xbox a lot to watch entertainment. I think it's a great machine for that. You can watch DVDs, Blu-rays, whatever, you know, and then you can download TVs and movies. Like, and it's great for that. So yeah. I get why they're still promoting it, but then over here, they're saying, but we're all about games now.
Yeah.
It just seems a little mixed messaging.
Sure.
And so maybe that's why it's confusing.
And I know it's just me and it's me being stupid. I can never fucking find achievements on this fucking thing when I'm playing. Well, I mean, when I'm playing, I can see that. But like, what's my total score? On 360, it was a couple swipes and there I was and I saw myself and I saw my gamer score and I was all set. Now I feel like I got to burrow into stuff and look, come on, man.
It's not as hard as we're potentially making it out to be.
I could literally sit down and in 3 minutes probably have figured everything out and been happy and whatever, but it's just like, it's just ugly.
I think the
this one looks cool.
The more important discussion or conversation is why is Microsoft and Xbox continually changing their UI?
I think they know they don't have it right, and I just it's weird that they haven't found one and just settled on it. Because that's the thing, there's plenty wrong with PlayStation stuff too, but they're like, well, that's what it is.
Well, some
now
of the,
you can make folders, enjoy.
Some of the conversation that I've seen online is that the Windows 10 team is kind of infiltrating Xbox and trying to make the Xbox ecosystem become more like Windows 10.
Sure.
And I don't know if that's a good thing. Shrug. If you guys have opinions about it, let us know. Write in kindoffunny.com/KFGD.
In more Xbox news, though, today, Spotify is on Xbox One in 34 markets around the world. So get listening to that. I was surprised. We had a lot of kids writing in about that. A lot of questions about Spotify. I think I made one made the cut or whatever. So we'll save it for that. But I say that now. I really would have probably inserted it here. So maybe it didn't make the cut. Because it's like, just do you listen to games when you or music when you play games?
No.
Yeah. Super rarely for me. And if I'm going to listen to something, it's podcast while I grind in an RPG usually.
Yeah. I've never listened to anything but the actual game music and game audio.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Call me a purist.
I do, purist. the purist one. Number four on the Roper Report. Nintendo's announced a bunch of Gamescom live streams. This is via IGN. Super Mario Odyssey will air Wednesday, 8/23. That's August 23. That's how we say it in the United States, the best country in the world. At 6 a.m. Pacific time. Metroid Samus Returns has a live stream Thursday, August 24th at 3 a.m. Pacific time. And then Xenoblade Chronicles 2 has a live stream at some point. IGN had to narrow that one down, and I didn't know where they were pulling this information. So there you go. Good to know. You going to wake up, watch that Samus Returns at 3 a.m., Andrea?
No.
No, yeah. Super Mario Odyssey. Even Metroid and Super Mario Odyssey, I'm just like, I'm done. They're great. Let's go. Just ship them. I don't need to see any more. I'm done. I'm ready. Are you excited for Super Mario?
Oh, absolutely.
Just making sure. We got to start weeding the people out that aren't. A lot of troublemakers out there. And number five, Ni No Kuni 2 Special Edition and Season Pass have been revealed. Andrea, you want to take it? You added it.
Oh, yeah. So I just thought, you know, Ni No Kuni fans might want to know that Remnant Kingdom is available for purchase digitally. The Season Pass is what I mean. The Season Pass. Let me read this.
Got it.
A Season Pass for Ni No Kuni 2 Remnant Kingdom is available for purchase digitally on the PlayStation 4 and Steam for $19.99. The Season Pass content includes the following two large DLC releases. The contents of these DLCs are under the protection of the King's Royal Guard for now, but stay tuned for more information. And a supply kit, a healthy heaping of items handpicked for the discerning adventurer.
How's this season pass strike you? Well, season passes have been all the buzz around here lately.
I mean, you know, you should at least tell people what they're getting for their
money.
They're
getting two large DLC releases, duh.
Listen, as I've always said, DLC is about player choice.
Yeah.
You can choose to buy it. You can choose to not. I would suggest maybe you wait until they tell you what you're buying before you buy it. At least when Call of Duty says, hey, this is the season pass that you're getting for $40 or $50 or however expensive their season pass is. They're like, but you get all of this, you know, and this is like so vague.
Yeah. In fairness,
Destiny's season pass was super vague, too. I mean, at least they named, you know, like the expansions.
Sure.
But
yeah, I think this is just another one to keep Ni No Kuni 2 relevant. You know what I mean? Now that they push that back a little bit, keep it on the forefront. Here's a little piece of news we can put out. You figure then it's another news hit, another marketing beat when they can say, here's what the DLCs are and things to that effect. But yeah, if you love it, great. I like season passes for the games I like. The rest, I just don't pay attention. Andrea.
Yes, Greg.
It's Tuesday. There's a ton of games. And if I wanted to know what came to the digital mom and grab shops, where would I go?
You would go to the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform, as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily show hosts each and every weekday.
Now, Joey, one day you will have to sing yourself, you know. If you're running the show, I'm just putting that out there. All right. Okay. So many things are out. Let's jump right into it. Jive right into it. First off, four games have been added. Nope, five. To Xbox. Nope. That's a long title. It's four. Xbox One backwards compatibility has been added for Batman Arkham Origins, Fighting Vipers, Deadliest Warrior, The Game, and Disney Bolt. And I know everybody was really jonesing for that Disney Bolt.
I have no idea what that game is.
I believe that was like, wasn't it a dog that was really fast? The movie Bolt by Disney or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
He had
that's
a little
right.
lightning bolt collar. Well, there you go. Now you can all jump on and play it on your Xbox One. However, other games coming out. Black Hole Complete Edition, Xbox One and PS4. Lawbreakers, which came to PC yesterday, comes to PlayStation 4 today. Worth noting, I saw over on GameSpot, I believe, there's a PlayStation 4 hitch problem or something. They've narrowed it down. They think they should have it fixed real quick. But
a hitch problem.
Like you'll be playing and like it'll freeze for a second. Like the gameplay will hitch. And like when you're in the shooter, that's supposed to be all about pinpoint accuracy and stuff. That's no good.
Oh, yeah,
but it's something about switching roles, they think, is what the problem is. But they know they're on it. Armello Deluxe Edition comes to PlayStation 4. Batman, the Telltale series, Season 2, Episode 1, comes to Xbox One, PS4, PC, iOS, and Android. We did a full episode play yesterday with Troy Baker, Anthony Gruber from the game. I had a lot of fun, but I really like that Batman season. This one seems like it's going the same way. Different things. Cool shit can happen. I like that. Comet Crash 2. The Kronkoid Wars comes to PlayStation 4. Graceful Explosion Machine comes to PlayStation 4, and I love that on Switch, so give it a shot. Icy comes to PlayStation 4. Oh, man. Masquerada Songs and Shadows comes to Xbox One and PS4. I haven't seen that at like every PAX forever. Rest in peace, Colin Moriarty. Mega Man Legacy Collection 2 comes to Xbox One and PlayStation 4.
He tweeted about that yesterday.
Oh, did he?
Mm-hmm.
I missed it. He's not dead. This release didn't kill him. Neon Drive comes to PlayStation 4. Neptune Flux comes to PlayStation VR. Cinemora EX comes to Xbox One, PS4, Switch, and PC. Fox Folk comes to PC. Shout out to Drinkbox. Severed comes to Switch. A stealth release that so many people were chatting about today. I was proud to see that. For DLC, I want you to know that Starfire is available right now in Injustice. And the final release that has oh so many questions, it was almost a news story. Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice comes to PlayStation 4 and PC. Hellblade from Ninja Theory. Andrew, Renee, have you played any?
No, I have not.
Okay. I have played a tiny bit. I enjoyed what I played. So there's no spoilers here, I guess. I didn't realize, knowing little about the game, I know it's Ninja Theory, so it's going to be beautiful and it's going to have action in it. When starting up that game, pretty much not knowing anything about it, and it's like, it talks about like the mental health advisor they brought on. It's like, okay, that's not something you see. And then you start playing and this woman's hearing all these different voices and all in her head, and like they're having conversations, and it's like, fuck, this is really creepy and cool. This is really atmospheric. I like where this is going. And then they have this system in there that we'll talk about in a second called the rot, right? That she's infected with it and it slowly creeps up her arm. And if you die, it climbs higher on your arm. And every time you die and restart the game or the checkpoint or whatever, it's supposed to climb higher and higher and higher. And if it gets to your head, you die. And that's game over. Permadeath deletes your save. Now, that I saw and I was like, what a cool mechanic. What a cool little twist on games. Then, of course, everybody was embargoed, so nobody could talk about this. The reviews are all pretty super positive. And then this news story came out and the internet fucking went ablaze. So I'm going to go into questions. We'll all sort through it together, our emotions on this. Nathan C. wrote in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD, just like you can. It says, greetings! I just read a report on Express that Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice, may have a feature that causes the game to delete your save file if you die too many times. Now that the game is out and the embargo is up, I'm guessing, can you confirm this news? If it's true, how do you feel about the idea of permadeath in games generally? Love you, Greg and Andrea, and have a happy Tuesday. Now, I know you have, like as I said, this broke. Many people were reporting about the permadeath thing. Then what? PC Gamer N had something else to say about it.
So, their headline says, Hellblade's permadeath is a bluff. It says, racing around the internet like burning hellfire today has been the knowledge that Ninja Theory's Celt action thriller? I don't know what that is.
Celtic?
Will delete your save file if you died too much. Well, they decided to test out this theory. And what they found was that it is a bluff. So it says, yes, the game promises you that the rot will increase with every death, eventually killing Senua. Is that how you say it?
I'm saying Senua, but I'm stupid.
Somebody will give us kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Tell us how to pronounce this name correctly. It doesn't. The rot will continue to grow to a certain point, which we think is governed by how far through the game you are, and then stop. In fact, this happens fairly quickly after a couple of deaths. Details and 50 of our own deaths are in the video above, which is on their website. However, the threat of it plays into the game's message, which focuses on Senua's own fear of her enemies and degrading mental state. We'll let a few more people finish the game before we discuss how the ending plays into all of this, but needless to say, it was a clever decision, even if it may have backfired with a portion of the players. player base.
Because so many people were upset about it today, yes. not knowing what they're jumping into. Now, in the same thread, we're going to let Drafting Dave get in. Because I think he makes some good points, regardless of if it's true, how true it is, all these different things. It's titled Hellblade Permadeath. And then in parentheses, Greg Rant. Everyone seems up in arms about Hellblade's permadeath. I feel like a lot of people have been asking Kojima to do these types of antics again for quite some time. Finally, a developer has the balls to follow through on what we've all been asking for. And what do we all do? We shit all over them. Come the fuck on, people. This is the immersive shenanigans we've been asking for. Ninja Theory had the vision to put permadeath into the game in order for you to connect with the main character. This is the closest we're going to get to memory card deletion antics. We should be commending Ninja Theory, not whining like little babies. I get it. I'm a full-time working father. I don't have time to start games over, so don't fucking die 20 times and enjoy a game that makes you fear death. Drafting Dave. Lots happening in this story, Andrea. Let's say permadeath was real. The rot gets to her head, and it's you die 5 times and you're dead and it's over. Do you like it or do you not like it?
I don't like it as a player.
Yeah.
But I also don't have to play this game if I don't like it. I mean, if you are pissed off about this because permadeath, let's hypothetically say it was a thing.
Yeah.
Even though now we know it's not. You don't have to play this game. And it's a tough thing because if there's people out there that are really excited about it or, you know, they like this franchise or they like this character and they like want to experience it. That group of people may be like, well, that's not fair. I should be able to play the game and not have permadeath. But I mean, he's kind of got a point. Maybe just don't die then.
That's my
I don't want to be like, get good, but take your time through the game. Go slow, play conservative. There's ways to get around this.
My thing about the game, so let's take away any information from today. I started it Monday night, one of those two, and jumped in, and that thing came up of like, you know, if the rock hits her head, and she's dead, and it's all over. I'm like, oh, that's a really cool mechanic. And I remember if it mentions deleting your save or whatever the fuck, but it's permadeath. Okay, cool. Into that game. It's a beautiful world. And I mean, it's beautiful in a creepy, disgusting way. But I mean, like, it's a visually, like, really, you know, well done. I can see everything. It feels like a real place. And then I got into the first few battles. And I was talking to Dan Riker today on Twitter really briefly. Because he has been like, he's, I think, way deeper than me. And I know he's way deeper than me because I'm so shallow into this game. But he was like, I've been playing for a while and it's just not doing it for me. The combat's repetitive, this, that, and the other. And I was like, that's my fear. Is because for me, I've done 3 or 4 battles with these like creatures that pop up and whatever. And the first time I was like, oh, all right, cool. And I'm like dodging and I felt like a badass. I was like using like, you know, my Souls gameplay, which is incredibly limited, but all right, cool. I'm just going to strafe around you and take these people out. And I did. And I was like, all right, did it. Yay. But by the fourth one, I'm like, that's the same enemy again. Like I'm kind of getting bored. And I know it's the entry area and all these different things, but it's just like, am I doing this the whole time? And that was a stumbling block for me. And I was like, okay, cool. But it wasn't tough is what I'm saying. And I know that there'll be bosses and there'll be things and challenges later on, but it wasn't like I was in that battle fearful that I was going to get fucked up by these guys. I figured them out real quick. You know, when they'd respawn, one would get me and slash me. I was like, oh, fuck, and I'd fall back. But I didn't die in any of those opening battles, with the exception of one where you have to die that explains the rot in your arm. I'm not worried. If that game, because I want to give it more time and I want to give it a better shot, because I really like the world. I really like what they're doing with this mental health stuff. I like that she seems a little bit like, this is all, maybe it's all in her head. I don't know if that's the end of the game or anything. I want to keep playing. And if I get super into it and the rot keep starts creeping up my arm, I think it's just going to be like it was in the old days of like, oh, fuck, I'm about to lose this battle. Pause, quit, hard quit, come back in, reload the save, the checkpoint that's there, and go from there and try to do it again. Like there's enough ways around this that, and I understand that it's this balance of what I figure, what I think of as old school gaming, right, where there'd be these different little things you had to do in games where, oh, fuck, I'm going to lose, so I'm going to quit out and hard reset the NES and come back in and do this. I feel like it's a nice throwback. It's a different thing. I like the idea that it is different, and that's the thing where it's like, for me, when I'm playing one of the Souls games, right, and it's like, oh, I got struck down and my shit's all the way over there and I got to go get it again, that was always frustrating for me and one of the reasons I think that I was pushed back from those games, especially as challenging as they were. And so it's the same thing you're talking about of like, that's just not for me and that's not what I enjoy. Whereas this kind of like, if it was real permadeath, if it were, there were no way to cheat and your save's going to get eaten, it's like, all right, cool. I'd probably never see the end of the game, I bet, if it was that I'm going to play through it and eventually 8 hours in, or I think it's, people have been saying 6 hours, but hours on top of hours in, right. I get cut down and lose everything. I'd be like, oh, well, I enjoyed what it was, and I lost my save, and that's kind of a cool story, and that's the narrative I can walk away from with that game.
We're in an era of gaming where you don't have to play through it all yourself if you want to find out. Somebody's going to put a full playthrough on
today.
YouTube.
Yeah.
Somebody's streaming it on Twitch right now. And the thing that I thought was, you know, kind of interesting about this whole story is, like, why would you even... I guess, would you call it lying about permadeath? People are using the word bluff here. I mean, why would you even make that a thing when you know someone's going to suss that out instantly? We're in an era of internet sleuthing. Yeah. Somebody was going to instantly reveal that this was not real. So why would you even lie about it or bluff about it?
Well, it sounds like, from their article, right, it sounds like it's real to an extent if you fail a million times at this one section to get a creep up. I don't know. This strikes me as something that is one of those times and I don't think it really fucked them, but the embargo kind of blew up in their face in the way of, like, why not have this embargo lift, you know, Sunday night Sunday into Monday, 12:01 a.m., right? Where, hey, the reviews are all stellar. Like, I think, you know, and I know you can't ever be 100% sure you're going to get nines and, you know, eight fives and stuff, but they should have been pretty confident in this, right? If those reviews post Monday, this entire conversation is hashed out throughout Monday. I think you get to Tuesday where the game's now available and people have already figured out that, oh, well, it is kind of real, but it isn't. And this is why, and this is X, Y, and Z.
Right.
Not that I think that this morning a bunch of people woke up and canceled the pre-orders. I don't think that's really what happened either. But I think it's your launch day could have been a bit more exciting and a bit more, hey, man, everything's awesome, rather than having to get out and try to put out fires in terms of what permadeath actually is. Not to mention that it's still confusing. I'm sure people are writing into kindoffunny.com/you're wrong right now, trying to explain a little bit more of what this is and what's happened since we wrote these stories down on the paper and came in to do the show.
Right.
We have another question about it, but it's in a different vein.
Okay.
Mara writes in, aka the Flannel Death. Greg and Andrea, today marks the release of both Lawbreakers and Hellblade. Both games are made by AAA caliber developers, but only cost $30, and Hellblade is even self-published. Clearly, this is the beginning of what you and he's talking about, you, Greg, and Colin have been discussing all those moons ago. Developers are exploring the price range in the market a bit, and it's got me excited. Who do you think the next developers to try this out will be? Could we see Techland forego a publisher and release their next game with a $30 or $40 price tag? Perhaps CD Projekt Red will release Cyberpunk 2077 for $80 or $100. What are your thoughts? It's one of those I can't. It's got to be a developer. Like Epic would be somebody how I would point to, but they're already doing different things and exploring the scale with the way they're putting out Fortnite and Paragon, in the way that these are games that at least Fortnite's free to play, right? And Paragon is Fortnite will be free to play.
Correct.
Paragon, is it free to play yet?
It is free to play now. Yes.
Okay. So they're already doing it. I think that's the thing when you're talking about it. I think when you're talking about what Cliff and Bosky are doing and how they can explore the scale, well, they're a new studio and they got to set that vision and move, even though originally it was going to be free to play for them too. And they had to.
Yeah, pivot. No, Bosky's journey with Lawbreakers has been really interesting, watching the game itself change throughout the development cycle, but also watching how the way that they're delivering it to people who want to play has changed. Clearly, you know, partnering with Nexon,
yeah,
I think, was the right call, because Nexon has a lot of experience in this space, and so that's why free to play at first made sense. And then I think, you know, Cliff took a look at the market and took a look at what people were saying, and he is a realist in a way that I really appreciate.
Oh yeah.
On stage at the PC Gaming Show at E3, you know, he said, hey, this is going to be $29.99 because I don't believe in charging for all this extra bullshit when it's just a multiplayer only game. And like, yeah. I think that was really refreshing for a lot of people to hear and say, hey, thank you for understanding that, you know, a lot of games are held hostage by this $59.99 price point here in the US, because there's expectations around that number. 100%. And then there's expectations if you list your game at $39.99. Does that mean that it's a lesser game, that it's not as good, that they don't think it would sell if it was $59.99? And I think Cliff was like, I'm just going to fly in the face of that and say, hey, I'm putting out a quality product, but I understand that it's not as long or as deep of a product as, say, you know, like a Battlefield is.
Sure.
And so I'm going to give you guys this really cool thing, and this is what I think it's worth, and then we're gonna, you know, add in some stuff later on, but I want to charge you what I think, you know, you know, it's worth. And I think that that's really liberating. And yeah. I think it's great.
Well, that frank discussion goes so far to build goodwill in a good community, right? And I think it's also the fact that it speaks to, oh, okay, that's an interesting pitch. I want to try that game. Hellblade, whether the permadeath, I think the permadeath thing would be cool, right? And it is a 6-hour game where in the, you know, I mean, that's 3 episodes of a Telltale game, right? And my thing with Telltale is always like, oh man, what a great, I come home and I can do that and, you know, get on with my night or do something else or whatever. Hellblade, hey, we're doing this really interesting radical idea of this person who seems to have a mental illness. Hey, we're coming in and we're going to have it only be 6 hours long. Hey, we're going to put it out at this price point. And like, yeah, maybe your save gets eaten. Like, you didn't invest that much time in it. We're not saying you put 12, 15 hours into this game and got screwed. No, you're doing this and this little thing. And like, maybe you want to replay and try to get a better ending and try to do this thing. Hell yeah. Like, why not? I hope to see more developers and more publishers explore that. I think it's that interesting thing we talk about. And it was another refreshing Cliffism when I was talking to him about, you know, when they're bringing it to PlayStation 4 and stuff and what the price point was. And him being like, you know, like, we think of ourselves as a AAA developer, but we're a small team. You know, we're not. And I'd like to see that AA space, return, that mid-tier game return. And I think that as you see something like Hellblade and Lawbreakers and all these things that aren't your traditional definition of indie, you know what I mean? It's not just Jonathan Blow working on it or whatever, but they're not this AAA Naughty Dog game. You find that space that, okay, what does that look like? And can we start, you know, infusing things? And I bring up Naughty Dog, but even Uncharted the Lost Legacy not being $60. It's like, hey, take a shot on this shorter experience that is something different.
Absolutely. I don't know what he means here. Perhaps CD Projekt Red will release Cyberpunk 2077 for $80 or $100. I mean,
the old argument when Colin would make when we'd start talking about this, and I was like, yes, I want to see this mid-tier and I want to see games there. And I don't want a game that is $30-$40 to be like, oh man, that's a piece of shit. Because that was, remember like when Ratchet came out and it was a lower price point where I was like, oh, so it's not a real Ratchet or whatever. And then you got it like, oh my God,
that's the expectation I was talking about.
This is fantastic. Exactly. So if we could smash the expectations, Colin's counter, or not even counter, but taking it even further was always the fact of he would have paid more for The Witcher 3 because The Witcher 3 is such a huge game.
Absolutely.
And so with CD Projekt Red, are they crazy enough to be like, hey, Cyberpunk 2077 is this much bigger than The Witcher, this many more quests than The Witcher, all the DLCs included, so we're asking for $80, we're asking for $100.
Very few developers can position themselves in that place to potentially do that, right? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, CD Projekt Red is a perfect example because they demonstrated through how amazing The Witcher 3 was and how expansive that world was and just how much content is in that game that they could say, hey, did you like what we did here? Well, guess what? Over here, you're going to get that and more. And because of that, we're going to have to charge more. I think Rockstar could also do that because they have a history of demonstrating that what they put out is, you know, expansive quality content. But not everybody can do that.
100%. No, it's such a goodwill gesture. It is the fact that, hey, and it's, I mean, even with Lawbreakers and I mean Boss Key, right, where they've done this, they've garnered this goodwill. What does that mean for their next game and how they do it? But CD Projekt Red, you know, the people who put thank you letters to the fans in their the box of the game, you know what I mean? Like, they have so much goodwill that, yeah, I feel like you could do that, company could do this and not be seen as money grubby. And granted, it would then price the game out of some people's reach. But what's, if we're talking business dollars and cents here, the number of people you lose, do they equate to the percentage you're gaining on the box price?
It's hard to know because I think what Boss Key is going to see is that this game is going to sell exponentially better at a $30 price point than it would have at a $60 price point.
Yeah.
So they're probably going to sell so many more copies because people are willing to take a gamble on this title, on this new IP from a new studio and say, hey, well, it's $30 that I'm gambling instead of $60.
Yep.
And because of that, he'll be able to sell far more units than he would have at a $59.99 price point. So it's hard to know if somebody like CD Projekt Red, even though they have the reputation that they do, if they made a game $99.99 for the base game, if it would be able to still sell as much as it did.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's why it's fascinating to see the hypotheticals we've talked about for so long actually happening here. And it's the same thing, like you're talking about Lawbreakers. Hellblade is going to sell exponentially better because it has all this great buzz. It's not a $6. Because, I mean, think about it. This happened to Ninja Theory. They put out Heavenly Sword. And people are like, oh, it was good, but it didn't feel like it didn't live up to like what your expectations of a AAA Sony exclusive $60 game is supposed to be. And so here you are. All right, this isn't that as down here. And like, I think people are going to come in with different expectations. And when you get in there and that presentation starts going, and it is very, I don't want to say it's an art house game, but it's like very clear of like, the best way to play this is with headphones and surround sound. Like, you should do that. And I was like, okay. And then when I started in, like, I was playing it with Jen, and I was like, oh fuck. Like, yeah, I wish I still don't have the surround sound in the house set up yet. And I'm like, oh man, like, this is a game that would benefit from this. This is clearly made to be this artisanal experience of like, we know what we're doing and we're trying to get you to feel and, you know, react this way. It's a great time to be a gamer, everybody. I got some new dates for you, Andrea.
All right.
There's another Final Fantasy 15 Comrade multiplayer beta session this weekend, but it's very confusing how to do it, so I'm just going to read right from GameSpot.
Do it.
Square Enix recently launched a beta test for Final Fantasy 15's upcoming Compadres multiplayer mode, and things got off to a rough start. Server issues made it difficult to initially do much more than create a character and walk around a small patch of land, prompting the company to schedule a second beta test for this coming weekend. Strangely, though, you won't be able to simply grab the beta and jump in once it begins. In order to participate in the next beta, you'll still need to meet the previous requirements, own a copy of the game and its season pass, and be an Xbox Live Gold/PlayStation Plus subscriber. But you'll also need to ensure you have the closed online test downloaded by tomorrow, August 8th. That's today, ladies and gentlemen. It won't actually be available to download once the second test begins. So if you want to play this weekend, you got to download it now before they remove it from everything on the stores. So get in there and do it. God damn it. Another new date for you and another new game for you. UFO 50. This is a collaboration collection of 50 brand new 8-bit games from the creators of Spelunky, Downwell, and more. It's coming in 2018. I want your thoughts on this, Andrew. Have you watched the trailer?
I have not.
You want to go watch the trailer real quick?
Sure. I'm
gonna read a question. UFO 50 is what you're looking for. Debut trailer coming 2018. But while you do that, I'm going to read Tizo's question. Tizo wrote in and said, hey, Andrew and Greg. Yesterday, right around the time Kinda Funny Games Daily started up, right around Kinda Funny Games Daily time, a trailer was put up announcing UFO 50, a collection of 50 NES-styled games by 5 indie devs, including the creators of Spelunky and Downwell. It seems like the popularity of the NES Classic and other retro consoles, it is a cool idea to have a brand new experience that still has the feel of those collections. It does have me a bit worried, though. I love Spelunky and Downwell, and I'm not sure many of these games will have that kind of depth or appeal to me. However, with a likely low price, even 3 great games out of 10 good ones would still be worth it. I'm conflicted. I'm conflicted, but I will trust the devs for now. What are your thoughts?
So I'm watching this trailer as you were reading that, and these seem like interesting games. The ones that they have in the trailer immediately just seem like ripoffs from games that have already existed.
Sure. Yeah. That retro throwback feel and look. And you're like, wait, this feels,
I mean,
like,
but it, like, the gameplay looks, yeah, strikingly like other games.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are games out there that are using this art style that are doing unique and different things. I mean, take a game like Super Time Force, for example. Sure. I think it's great that they're packaging them all together for people who appreciate and like this art style and want this kind of gameplay. It gives them a lot of variety and also gives these indie devs who maybe never would have gotten their game in front of somebody, yeah, who appreciates this type of game making. And so by packaging it together, they've kind of eliminated some of that discoverability problem indie games have. Is it for me? No. I'm a proponent of new games, new ideas, new things are cool. Mm-hmm. Going back in time to play something or that looks like something old, I'm, yeah, kind of like, meh.
Old games,
that's
old.
Not I how I on. Prefer to spend my time playing games.
Sure.
But there are millions of fans out there who like doing this kind of gaming.
My thing, you know, his concern is that it won't have the depth or appeal to him. I wouldn't get hung up on that yet. I bet there's going to be games in here that when they get reviewed, it's going to be what he's talking about, where this was fine, that was fine, but this one is so crazy, and this, and you keep playing and it gets better and it does these different things. They'll be there. I think it's what you said is a great idea, and the fact that in both his question, in both the articles I was reading about it, like, and I watched the trailer and it was like from the creators of Spelunky, Downwell, and then it was a couple games I didn't recognize because just like I'm not that in tune to like the really, hey, the indies that are doing everything crazy. I can only see so much at every PAX indie mega booth, and it's like that's such a great idea of the way that you can take Spelunky and Downwell, and I'm sure this is the idea, and then get other people in front of them and other creations in front of them. I always like the idea of these developers who took years to make their games, you know, like for a Spelunky or something that affect, or Downwell, and be like, hey, before the next big project, I'm going to stretch my legs. I'm going to go do this. I'm going to make this mini game collection where we all contribute X number of games or however they break it all up and get in there.
Right. I think it's interesting that in TechCrunch's article about this, they say the 50 games will all have a single player mode and some will have multiplayer, but rest assured these aren't little 3-minute mini games. The FAQ says you'll probably need hundreds of hours to beat them all.
Hundreds of hours.
And so, I mean, if you can get hundreds of hours from a single disc,
yeah,
that's a good value.
Yeah. So I don't think you have to worry, Tizo. Give it a shot. It's going to be okay. The other new date for you, not a game date. Nintendo has revealed that its third World Championships will take place in New York on October 7th, 2017. That's all there really is to it. You can go, there's like 8 stores to go qualify in or something. You can get all those details. However, when Tim heard this, Mr. Nintendo out there, he got excited thinking that it could somehow tie into a Smash Brothers announcement or Super Mario Maker coming to Switch. Because last time it had a big announcement around the last Nintendo World Championship, and he's like, October 7th, such a random time. I'm like,
it would be a great time for them to announce they're bringing Smash to Switch.
Right. God, I hope they do.
I mean, they've got it, right?
Eventually, yeah. I'm not going to get excited for it yet. I'm going to assume this is some kind of marketing for Super Mario Odyssey. They're just building hype to that. That's what they're going to talk about.
I mean, that's the real thing to do.
Exactly. Yeah. So I won't bite on Tim's this is what's going to happen, but he did save the Bandicoot, so I have to listen to him occasionally.
Yeah, but do you remember his E3 predictions? Please.
Well, he always wants his Get Hype Gatorade moment. He didn't say Get Hype Gatorade before this, so I can't really be sure. A deal for the day for you. Just a heads up that For Honor is free this weekend, coming for all PlayStation Plus members August 10th through the 13th. If you want to jump in, try out For Honor and that stuff. But hard to believe, Andrea, we're running late. Now, granted, the show goes as long as we want it to, whatever. But when I was pulling together today, like, this is one of the... like, not barest, but like shortest Roper reports we've ever had in terms of like, oh, we're just talking. I was afraid we're going to clean out the Roper report in like 5 minutes.
No, we just had some discussion that went on a little bit.
What good discussion this show is on Kind of Funny Games Daily. Thank you, Kevin. tell your friends that we had a good discussion and do all this different stuff. Let's go to reader mail. We're going to start with Jeremiah Jux, who wrote into kindoffunny.com/KFGD. And I edited this question, but it's still fucking long. Good morning, Greg and Andrea. Last week, I bought Splatoon 2. Greg, Andrea, please send help. Splatoon has me in its ink and it won't let go. This is a game I've known about for such a long time, but I had no idea how great it was until I got my Switch. So, this got me thinking. According to Wikipedia, the first Splatoon sold about 144,000 retail copies in Japan on its first week. A big success for the first title, no doubt. Now, according to Kotaku, Splatoon 2 has sold about 670,955 retail copies in Japan. Of course, without disregarding the old adage that sequels sell more, I still can't help think that the Switch has officially become the second chance a lot of Wii U titles needed. My question is this. Through the Switch, do you think that Nintendo has officially made a comeback? Not only with their reputation or numbers, but also with the quality of life the Switch can offer game developers. I certainly hope so, since this is the first Nintendo console I've ever owned. Thanks. This show is too good, y'all. XOXO, Jeremiah Jux. Is this the redemption of Nintendo?
Not yet.
Really?
I think they're on the path.
Okay.
I think they still are making some questionable business decisions, as evidenced by the Nintendo Online chat app.
Sure.
Right? So, like, they're doing some things right, and they're doing some things wrong. So, is it their comeback? Not yet. But they're on the right road. Mm-hmm. I think that they're doing some really great things. We've talked about how the Switch is certainly better than the Wii U.
Sure.
And is a nice replacement to people who are looking to move beyond their 3DS for portable gaming. I have yet to play my Switch in docked mode.
Wow, still, okay.
I have never...
impressive.
I've never docked it and played it on the TV. I've only played it in handheld mode.
Yeah, okay.
So I think that they're doing some things right. I'm excited to play Splatoon 2. My copy finally arrived.
Nice.
I haven't had a chance to play it yet, but after hearing Andy talk about it on the Games Cast, I was really like pumped for it.
Yeah.
I didn't spend very much time with the original Splatoon, just went through the cracks, like, you know, some games
you didn't want to turn on your Wii U. I understand.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
That's really
what nobody wanted to charge that stupid thing, have it go.
I had to like plug
hours
in the sensor bar. You know, ugh, it's a thing. So I'm excited to try this out as well. I think Nintendo is doing some excellent things, but like I said, it's too early. Don't call it a comeback yet.
I will say unabashedly that this is the redemption of Nintendo and the comeback. Dude, the Switch, it's so great. It's so great. And it's so crazy that everyone's
friend codes are still terrible.
Don't. I won't mince words. There are so many bonehead, stupid, what the fuck are you thinking Nintendo decisions with this thing. But it continues to succeed in spite of all that.
Yeah.
And it continues to be that, yeah, people, oh man, they make fun of the app, they'll make fun of the friends code, they'll do all this different stuff, but we're also stoked that the system is quality and it's sexy and it feels good, and then the dock mode, when you do use it's great, and the pro controllers are outrageously priced, and we're like, well, I'll keep buying them. Well, I can only get one, that fucking sucks. Like, it's one of those that there's so much bad news, but then there's, for once, so much good news that the scales actually are in favor of Nintendo on this and in favor of gamers. And like the idea of like when we were like, oh man, it's coming, but it, like they had the bad presentation. We're like, oh shit, is this where it all falls apart? And then it didn't. And then it was like, well, they only have like these games this year, and those games have all been fucking awesome. And like everybody keeps forgetting that Super Mario Odyssey is coming this year. And it's just like, holy shit, this is so good. And then it is the thing. I fucking, one of my favorite things every morning, have that cup of coffee, get, start prepping the show, go to NeoGAF. And it's always whatever game's been announced, and then in parentheses, please for the love of God, don't mention Switch. Like everybody's like, because it, every game that gets announced, and if it's a 3DS one especially, it's like, where the fuck is the Switch version? Everyone just wants to play Switch. And it's even at this point where, and granted, if next, a year from now, 365 days, some other game's getting announced for 3DS and we're not talking about it one day coming to the Switch, maybe it won't be so cute and quaint, you know what I mean? Like quirky, that is still not there. But like right now, it's like, even with that bad news of like, they're putting out this Metroid game, but it's not coming to Switch, people are like, all right, whatever, you're still doing a great thing. Like, I think the Switch, it's they're definitely on track. I'm not saying it's...
I just think you're giving them too many passes.
We all are. We as an industry
No,
are.
We all are not. You want I am to. Not
you
giving
love your
them
Switch.
I'm not giving them too many passes. I said they're doing some things right. They need to do better.
Okay.
They can do better. Do better, Nintendo.
Skate better, Nintendo. I agree they can do better, but like that, again, the train's out of the station on all those things. Friend codes are friend codes. That online is never getting better, but who the fuck cares?
I can't believe you're just like saying like whatever. This, deal with it.
I'm saying it is what it is, and it's I love what it is. Even though I can sit there and be like, oh, the friend codes are dumb, and I can't believe this is it. But it's also like the only online I'm ever going to want to play with that is like Mario Kart or golf or whatever. And then I do just use Discord or anything else. And not to mention that for me, the things I'm most excited for when we play Mario Kart are playing with other people. And when they eventually put a Mario Golf on, it'll be coming in here and playing in the morning with them. Or like when there's an Animal Crossing, coming and do that and Smash here. And like for me personally, and I assume for a lot of people, since it's not as big a deal, it's just like, I don't ever think of fucking online gaming with Nintendo. Like even that Mario Kart's here, I so rarely play online with it. I just play with Kevin over there. Ain't that right, Big Kev Dog? Starlock has a very funny question. Hi, Greg and Andrew. After the announcement of Horizon Zero Dawn's DLC, do you think that the Xbox One X will change its launch date? As we are still waiting for pre-orders to go live, I think we can assume there will be a press conference of some sort. Does it pay them to change? Yeah, does it pay them to change the date? Love the work you do. Give me some more of that sweet cream to go with my coffee one day. Danny O'Dwyer will stop being a deadbeat. No, Xbox not going to change its release date.
No, I mean, why would Horizon's DLC have anything to do with Xbox One X's launch date?
It's a great move by PlayStation of like, hey, like, here, this thing we're putting out, and it's exclusive to us, and there you go. You know what I mean? Like, remember this game you loved from the beginning of the year? Here it is. If you only have a PlayStation, don't worry about the Xbox One X, even though I don't think the Xbox One X release date is going to be like this world-changing event. He's saying
no.
Since they're still waiting for pre-orders, he can assume there will be a press conference? No. One day you'll wake up and there'll be an Xbox Wire release of like pre-orders are going live this day, or there won't be and they'll just be live on Amazon and Walmart like everything else happens in terms of release dates and pre-orders.
Right.
But no, I think you can, don't have to fret about that. Let's see what we got in here now. Okay, here. Two ones, then we're out. Tony says, can I get a happy birthday from the busiest lady in the business / fellow August baby?
Happy birthday, Tony, you fellow Leo.
And then Tony says, Greg, give up on Persona 5. It's okay. It's not okay, and I won't give up. I'm going to do it. Don't worry, everybody. Get off my back. Just getting stoked for everybody's golf, you know? That's a different thing, Kevin. All right. Yeah, they can't even hear you. Kevin's saying I am going to do it because he's a friend. He's backing me up. Durant writes in with the final question of the day. He wrote to kindoffunny.com/KFGD, just like you can. It says, morning, Greg and Andrew.
Morning.
I'm half expecting Uncharted The Lost Legacy to be better than Uncharted 4, but how well do you expect it to sell? I can't imagine it sells as well as the 9.4 million copies, as cited by Tim yesterday, Uncharted 4 sold. But do you think it can reach Horizon's 3.4 million? Thank you muchly for the awesomeness that is Kind of Funny Games Daily. I don't think it'll hit Horizon's 3.4 either.
No.
I mean, I think this is going to be... I would say I think it's going to be 1 point something million sold, maybe two. But I think that it's another, and this is what I've said it for a long time on this show. People are sleeping on this. I think it's going to release. I think it's going to be that it'll be like Hellblade, where everybody's like, holy shit, this is really good. This is a true Uncharted. It's not DLC, blah, blah, blah. But so many people think it is DLC, and so many people like us are excited about it and are going to play it. But I don't know how many people who are on the outside of like following game stuff every day are thinking about it.
Agreed.
Yeah.
There's really not much more to say.
Yeah. It's going to be fascinating. I wish him well, but it is going to be really, really interesting to see if we ever get numbers on how much that sold. Because that's always the thing, right? Like, since NPD hides it and just puts what the number is, okay. I think most people are going to download this because they do think it's DLC. So it'll be on the PlayStation top selling list. But we are the only reason they'll give us numbers as PlayStation is if, hey, it's doing incredibly awesome and insanely. Otherwise, it'll just be it met expectations. It's success to us, blah, 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 blah. Andrea, it's time to squad up.
Do it.
This is where one of you writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and gives me your username, PSM name, whatever it is. You tell me why you need friends. We read it here. And then the best friends find you in that game or on that platform and befriend you. Oliver Fitzgerald wrote in today. And let me tell you, he is a greedy motherfucker. He has given both his PS4 and Switch name. So on PS4, he has a terrible fucking name, which is WHTGLT. His Switch code is SW177752300909. He writes in and says, hello, Greg and Andrea. You beautiful bastards are fucking excellent. My awesome girlfriend works nights twice a week, and I'm looking to fill that empty void with some sweet, nasty love from the best friends. I've got far too many multiplayer games that I never seem to touch because of my earth-shattering hatred for playing video games with strangers. But the best friends aren't strangers. He asked for a pregnant pause.
That's the most pregnant of pauses.
Well, we just like to throw it for, it was an old Beyond/PS I Love You thing where Colin and I would stop talking to throw off the audio listeners because you try to do it long enough that they'd look at their thing to see if it broke. They're best friends. I'd be greatly appreciative of anyone willing to kick back and play GTA 5, Mario Kart, Tekken 7, Rocket League, Star Wars Battlefront, Jackbox, Dying Light, Borderlands, or WWE 2K17, and probably others I'm forgetting, with me on those cold, lonesome nights when I'm left to my own miserable devices. Much love from jolly old England. Oi! Oliver. So everybody hit up Oliver, WHTGLT on PS4, SW177752300909 on Switch. Friend codes are dumb.
They are dumb.
Let's check in with you, live watchers and viewers, at kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong to see what we dropped the ball on today. Andrea, how are we doing?
Well, we are doing, Greg said that there was, hold on.
No, I understood. No, I was fill time. You hit enter as I said, how we're doing. Like, fuck, it isn't up yet.
Greg said there was a new 3DS XL with Metroid on it. Her name is Samus.
Oh, you heathen. Oh, good. Yeah. What a bonehead call by me. Sorry, everybody. Sorry, Kevin. I let you down.
In regards to the Xbox UI, it's more up to you what populates the screens, hence the pin. So if you want to go to a game quick, you can just pin it. The upcoming UI will make this a bit easier to see, though, by the looks of it.
See, yeah, my thing about it is I get that. Like, I have, but
the pins are at the bottom. You have to scroll down to the
pins. And that's my thing is, like, it's when I'm, you know, I download the game through Microsoft or Xbox.com, and then I come home, and it's like, where, oh, fuck, right. Go over to my games, my apps, install, blah, and get it that way. Auto-populate the goddamn games.
Andrea said that the Windows 10 team is taking over the Xbox UI. The Xbox One runs a version of Windows 10, so the Windows 10 team is most likely very involved already. But it is still maybe true that they are getting more control over the Xbox One. I did not know that a version of Windows 10 runs on Xbox One, but that makes sense.
Yeah.
Mostly because I've never tried to do that because I have no desire to do that. I have a PC that runs Windows 10. That's plenty for me.
It just always wants to use the apps. Just download the program, all right? I don't need the Skype app. I want the Skype program, sir.
Bolt was not about a dog who was fast. It was about a dog actor who played a superhero dog who was fast and believed he actually had powers in real life.
All right.
I mean, that's a correction.
That is a correction.
Is it?
Yeah.
It was about a fast dog.
No, but the normal dog.
The dog. But the dog was. Let me guess. By the end of the movie, he's fast, right?
No.
He eats. By the end of it, he doesn't have broken legs at the end of the movie.
Total Biscuit today on Twitter confirmed that the permadeath feature in Hellblade was a mistake from the devs. I know that Total Biscuit was tweeting about this. A mistake from the devs?
I don't understand that. We'll have to look into that one.
Interesting. Let's look at that thread later. So this is for the last show. Andrea was here. Hold on. I got to read through this then.
Some editorializing. Here comes a story. Here comes a novella. That's the other thing, too. Again, you guys are still killing it. Great questions at kindoffunny.com/KFGD. Some of you, though, are trying to be Bill fucking Shakespeare over there writing goddamn novels. All right? Stop it. Be to the point.
Okay, so I don't know if this is really a correction, but I'm going to read it.
Okay.
So this is for the last show. Andrew was here. I watched the show on YouTube, so I couldn't post anything here then. Kojima didn't say that they downgraded PT so nobody would know it's his game. He said they did it so nobody could tell it's from a big studio, so everyone would think it's an indie game and the Fox engine could really make it a lot prettier. Look how beautiful is MGSV, and it's a giant open world, and PT is set in a corridor. And about the Death Stranding demo they showed, it wasn't for the game but for the engine, and Guerrilla devs were there too. It's their engine. Koji Pro is just using it for the game. Excuse my English. I'm not a native speaker. You're excused.
You're great, though.
Great show. Keep up the good work. So he's pretty much saying what I said. I think this is like a semantical thing now. But unless, based off what I read.
Well, the thing, I think the thought process was that there's a different connotation to that Kojima quote then, right? Because right. Before it was like, oh, I make such beautiful games, they had to dumb it down so nobody thought it was me. Whereas this is,
sure,
we dumbed it down so nobody thought it was the beautiful game.
I definitely editorialized. That's true.
Sure.
Thank you for writing in.
Nailed it. In good English. Don't worry about it.
This is kind of funny. It's not a real correction, but I like it.
Okay.
Greg said he'd beat Persona 5. He will, in fact, not.
Is that Double D Doherty?
No, it's not.
Son of a bitch. Cheeks Jr., stay away from me.
That's it.
All right, cool. Yesterday we talked about Shadow of War, and I was like, well, I don't know, what do you think of it, Shadow of War fans or whatever? Some folks wrote in, I want to read Lord Alley. Lord Alley wrote in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, hello, Greg and Andrew. So Greg asked about Shadow of Mordor. I nearly platted the game, and it never got old for me Lord Alley does not like periods. When I saw Shadow of War, I was super happy, and I know the game is not going to get old for me, too. Thanks for your amazing show. Because we're talking about if you wanted to use these microtransactions to XP boost your way through it. Enraged Sage wrote in and said, Greg Miller and Andrea Renee, how dare Warner Brothers add microtransactions into my single-player experiences? Imagine microtransactions being implemented in other single-player experiences, such as Uncharted The Lost Legacy. Will this trend of single-player microtransactions continue, or will players stop it? Thank you, guys.
I had to go back and re-listen to that segment of the show yesterday, because I also am conflicted about this.
Yeah.
Part of me says, hey, microtransactions make sense in certain context, but do they make sense in this context? And Tim was making the point, well, who does it hurt? You don't have to play online ranked mode, which is really where I think a lot of people were running up against, like, the ethics of having microtransactions.
If I get the war chest,
right?
That gives me a great orc, and I put the great orc at the defense of the online multiplayer mode.
And then you guys mentioned that Kotaku had said, well, does this mean that they're adding in a bunch of pad into the game specifically to incentivize people to buy a way to cut the pad down?
Yeah, yeah.
And that got me thinking. I really don't like the idea that open world games are adding in extra pad specifically that you can cut down with a microtransaction. A lot of open world games suffer from this problem where they're adding in like fetch quests or collectibles.
Superfluous content.
Correct. And it's like you could have a really awesome 50-hour experience, but you've made it into an 80 or 100-hour experience because you've now given me, you know,
stuff that drags.
900 Korok seeds or whatever, right? Yeah. Is that how you say that?
To me, it is, yeah. Kuroko, maybe. They just make up words. They think they can do whatever they want.
So it's things like that that I'm like, okay, I don't want all this extra bonus content unless, you know, the world is really great. But even then, I don't need to spend that many hours in it. So when Warner Brothers is saying, well, hey, we're going to give you a way to kind of cut down this so you could earn all this stuff in game.
Yeah.
I'm not really okay with that when the game is full priced. If it's a free-to-play game, microtransactions make sense. The devs have to get paid somehow.
Sure.
If it's a game like Lawbreakers that's $29.99 and then they're saying, well, we're going to add this extra content over here and then you have to pay separately for that. That makes sense. But when it's a full AAA release single player focused. These aren't cosmetic items. They do impact gameplay. And then they're asking you to buy it. It doesn't sit right with me. I don't like that.
Yeah.
So I'm conflicted because I like this game. I really, really loved Shadow of Mordor.
So you're going to play this one?
Absolutely.
Okay.
But I'm going to have to see exactly how much I can benefit from buying the boxes versus trying to get them in game. Because I didn't ever complete all the way. I didn't 100% the first game because it got to be too much. There was just too much running around.
Sure.
Too much, you know, pad.
Sure. Yeah.
And so there, it's going to be even more pad because this game is definitely bigger from what I've seen.
Yep.
I don't know how I like that idea that you're going to charge me full price and then say, well, you can cut down your time if you give us more money. I guess so. I also need to see like the breakdown of just how expensive these boxes are going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely at this point, I think it's everybody's just got to wait and see because it could be a lot of, you know, overblown nonsense. You know what I mean? It could just be that, all right, cool, you get it. And yeah, you're earning a better sword out of the box that you could have gotten from taking this down. And okay, cool. But it doesn't make me the reason for me, if I really enjoy the gameplay, I'd want to go take down that tower, right? I'd want to go take down that place. And that's the thing of, is the XP boost then getting me ahead of the point? Is it XP based in terms of like, it's just so weird. I don't know. And nobody knows. And that's the thing. It's so hard to try to talk about what this could or couldn't be, not knowing what it's going to be.
Right. I think the thing that the reason why I'm so conflicted and that's not sitting right with me is you get to the concept of, was this game specifically developed to accommodate for these microtransactions? And so did they say, well, we have to make the, you know, decay rate for this or like the drop rate for this a specific way because somebody at the publisher side says we want to make money from these boxes. You need to change the game in order for us to be able to sell these boxes. That to me doesn't feel right.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
That to me sounds like somebody's compromising on a creative vision, that they're compromising the experience for people who are playing this who can't afford to buy the boxes. So as a single player experience, why would you do that to your audience? But I need more information
about it. Yeah, it's a wait and see, right? Yeah, yeah, but those are all great points. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, August 8th, 2017. Thank you for joining us. Remember, each and every day we jump into the nerdy video game news you need to know about and we get dirty with it. If you like that, you can get it on a variety of platforms. Watch us live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames or watch us later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames or listen on podcast services around the globe. No matter where you do it, thank you so much for doing it and caring about this show. It's our pleasure to make it for you. Remember to be part of it, kindoffunny.com/KFGD. And remember, until next time, it's been our pleasure to serve you. Joey's learning how.